KFSR presents the Fresno State Student Spotlight with Fresno State's Vice President for Student Affairs and Enrollment Management, Dr. Frank Lummis, and Fresno State Student Special Guests, 90.7 KFSR.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Dr. Frank Lummis. Thanks for joining us this morning, and I'm very excited to be here. And with me is Fresno State student guest Danica Brumbelow. And also with us in the studio is Jessica Adams, coordinator in the Cross-Cultural and Gender Center, who works with LGBTQ plus programs, and Lisa Risch, our victims advocate. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to talk about Denim Days. So the first question I'm going to ask you is, what is Denim Days? When did it begin? Can you tell us why it was started? I'd like to know a little bit more of the history of it.
Yeah, Denim Days started 17 years ago, and it was started by the Peace Over Violence campaign. And it started because at that time, the Italian Supreme Court had overturned a rape case because they felt that since the victim was wearing tight jeans, she would have had to help her rapist take her pants off, which they counted as consent. So the next day after that case, the Italian parliament decided to stand up for her, and they all wore jeans to work that day to sort of take a stand with her. And from there, it spread from Italy to the U.S., and we've started doing it across the nation and internationally.
Very interesting. So Denim Days got started not only kind of in protest of what happened there, but the fact that the jeans symbolize something bigger than this. Would that be accurate?
Yeah. In that case, for them, the jeans were symbolizing that your clothing isn't consent and that you're not giving consent by how you look. It's an actual active consent. You need to be able to say yes without there being the threat of if you say no, something's going to happen to you. Mm-hmm. And so to have such a large group of people in power stand up for that was a really big deal.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like it was a protest against destructive attitudes and sexual assault in general.
Yeah, it was definitely a protest to start a conversation, really, about how, as a culture, we view sexual assault and the way that we constantly keep putting blame on the victim as if it was their fault that someone decided to rape them. So bringing it up with clothing, it's one of the biggest ways that we talk about it. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely other ways that as we continue with Denim Days that everyone's trying to expand into. So talking about how our rape culture and just how we look at people and how we blame people for things that aren't their fault.
So would you say in terms of this going from Italy to the United States that this movement has taken on, you know, a bigger group? I mean, are these Denim Days all over the country? Are there primarily in certain parts of the country? Give me a little bit more about how much this has taken off.
So it started mostly in LA, and then we had groups in LA beginning to do sort of a Denim Day on the last Wednesday of April. And then from there, it started taking off through most of California, and from there, it spread across the U.S. So it's done at a lot of college campuses. Mm-hmm. Offices will have their own Denim Day where they'll just have everyone come into work and they'll take a picture and post it. But it really is spreading across the country, and it does happen in other countries as well. It's getting bigger.
So it's starting to catch on.
Mm-hmm.
So Lisa, now you're our campus sexual assault advocate. How do you spread word across the campus about this kind of programs and services and things that we do on this topic?
Right now, we're in a really kind of unique, great position from a society to be in where there's been a lot of attention and resources related to sexual violence on college campuses, including at the highest possible level with President Obama and Vice President Biden proposing legislation and funding for programs and services related to sexual assault on college campuses. So what we've tried to do is, one, my position within the state of California, it's mandated that an advocate is on all of our 23 campuses to support students and let them know that there are resources available. We are also doing dog days during orientations to let people know about the services and what resources are available for students. That includes new students and transfer students. We're doing presentations for potential first responders, how to appropriately assist somebody that discloses that they've been impacted by this type of sexual violence. We reach out to different clubs and organizations and let them know of our services. And like with the Cross Cultural and Gender Center and Danica putting on a number of events. It is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, so we are tabling, just doing a number of different activities to let people know that we are standing up against sexual assault on college campuses and that there are services available for anybody that has been impacted by this type of violence.
So you were saying 23 campuses. So I assume you're talking about the CSU campuses here in California, but also with the new laws, I understand that sexual assault or victims advocates are pretty much starting to sprout up in all different places at the university level. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Specifically on college campus in the state of California, the CSU system has mandated that all 23 campuses have a victim advocate present on campus as of June of 2015. So all of the 23 campuses have somebody there full-time or either contracting with their local rape crisis center to provide these confidential support services for students. The 10 UC campuses have done the same as well with the advent of their CARE departments, Campus Advocacy Resources and Education. So California is pretty much a front runner with the mandates to have these positions on campus, although victim advocates have been serving in these roles across universities for many, many years. Although with the recent legislation and the passage of the VAWA Reauthorization Act of 2013 provided additional funding and resources to have these positions on campus to support students.
So a number of universities have had these programs sporadically across campus, but now it's becoming more of a federal mandate and sometimes state mandate to have these positions.
Yes, and I think the attention that sexual assaults on college campuses have received has been kind of the impetus for different universities to recognize that this is a serious issue and that we need to address it and provide the necessary funding and resources to support our students that have been impacted by this type of violence. If you look at the national statistics of 1 in 5 females who will be sexually assaulted during their college career, that's a significant number of students on college campus that are impacted with this. That affects not only their personal life, but their academic life as well. And so with the passage of the legislation and the attention that it's received on a national level, you see now either the mandate to have these positions or additional funding for these types of programs and positions, not only for the victim advocacy, but violence prevention coordinators and people that have full-time positions just doing outreach and education to provide this service to the campus because it's definitely needed.
Great. So lots of programming going on throughout the campus on this very important topic to bring awareness to individuals. So if I had a friend who was involved in a sexual assault and they needed assistance, how do I get them to you? Tell us where your office is. Tell us how we can contact you or get other services if we're in need 24/7.
Sure. So my office is located in the Student Health and Counseling Center, although I meet students anywhere that they feel most comfortable. So sometimes that's the library, sometimes that's Starbucks, wherever they feel most comfortable. But my office actually is in the Student Health and Counseling Center. There is a phone number. It is 559-278-6796. It's a 24-hour number where I answer it during normal business hours, but our students can connect directly with our off-campus resources, Rape Counseling Services, RCS, for individuals that have been impacted by sexual violence, our Marjorie Mason Center for our student, staff, and faculty that have been impacted by dating violence, domestic violence, or stalking. Our community partners have advocates available 24 hours a day to assist them and provide the support services necessary. We also have a number of resources on the Victim Advocate website. So if you search or type in sexual assault or dating violence or advocate on the Fresno State website, you will be directed towards the Victim Advocate website, which has a number of different resources that are available to students if they don't want to call me or if they don't want to come and talk to me. If it's a student, staff, or faculty that somebody has disclosed to, I'm happy to meet that person in their office. I've had a number of faculty walk students over to my office, and so I think that's worked really well. But hopefully, even calling the Student Health and Counseling Center, they should be able to connect you with me for those particular situations. And after hours, students via that 24-hour telephone number can contact our community partners to get the medical care and police assistance that they need 24 hours a day if needed.
So that's great. So really, there's no reason not to get to someone during the day from 8 to 5. Your office is available and you have people on the phones. We have our police department who's here 24/7. They can always go there and they can help them with after-hour care, or they could go directly to Marjorie Mason or Rape Crisis Center.
Yes.
At any time.
Yes. Students can access all of those services 24 hours a day. Because we understand that the majority of these incidents occur in the evening hours, not between the 8 and 5. So we want to make sure that students know that even if it is on a weekend, that they can still get services to assist them regardless of the time that it occurred.
And as I understand it, this is all year long. So it's not just during the semester, but it's summers, it's other times. Is that correct?
Correct. As a staff member here, I am on campus, I was going to say 365 days a year.
Pretty close.
But our community partners are available 365 days. So it doesn't matter if it's winter break, spring break, or during the summer, you can still receive confidential support services either through my office or through the community partners, RCS or Marjorie Mason Center.
Right. And our police department.
And the police department.
The 1 week that we're even closed down around the Christmas holiday, the police are still here 24/7 protecting the campus. So again, there seems to be no reason a person can't get help if they reach out to some of the people that you mentioned. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank
you're welcome.
You. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So let's get back to Denim Days. I had a few more questions. I understand there's a Denim Days promise. Could you tell me a little bit about what that is?
The Denim Day promise is what we're going to be asking everyone to take, and they're going to sign their name on a pair of jeans when they do this. The first part of the promise is to recognize that sexual assault and sexual violence is everyone's issue. It's not just an issue for women to fix. This case in Italy wasn't just an Italian case. This is stuff that happens everywhere, every day. So we want people to recognize that everyone plays a part in ending it. The second is that we want people to participate in a conversation. We need people to start talking about this issue and stop pretending like it's just something that happens with a stranger in a dark alley because you chose to wear the wrong outfit and walk down the wrong place. So we're going to ask people to start using the hashtag GearUp and hashtag Denim Day so we can get this conversation going past just what people come and see at our table, but so they can talk about it with their friends, their family, talk about it online and really get the conversation going. The third part is that we need people to start supporting our survivors and not to blame our victims. And the last part is that we want people to engage in healthy and violence-free relationships.
So you were talking a little bit about the support. Other than going online and adding your support or tweeting something out, is there actually a place where someone can sign their support?
Mm-hmm. On our table on April 27th, we're going to have jeans out and we're going to have a bunch of paint. And we're going to be asking students that when they take this pledge to sign their name and write a small message of support next to their name. So that way we can keep using these for years to come on Denim Days to show how many students have shown their support for this so that people walking by can feel the connection to their campus.
Great. Before I get to a question I had about how we're spreading information about Denim Days, let me go back, Lisa. I want to ask you another question. And that is, when you were talking about the number of victims, I believe you said 1 in 5?
Yes.
So 1 in 5 individuals are victims. And I think sometimes, kind of speaking to what Danica was saying, that many times people think that this is a women's issue. Could you talk a little bit about, in that 1 in 5, how many of those are men or other groups with that?
Sure. So the 1 in 5 statistic has been associated with females. So 1 in 5 female students will be sexually assaulted during their college career. And research indicates that between 4 to 6% of males will also be impacted by sexual violence during their college career. So although the numbers are smaller, it's still a significant amount of students. If you think of our college campus has roughly 10,000, 12,000 male students, 6% of those will be impacted somehow by sexual violence during the 4 to 6 years that they are here on campus. Mm-hmm. And then 20% of females here on our campus, which is right around 292 per year, would be impacted by this type of violence, which is obviously much too high. And numbers that we are trying to work really hard, one, to know that if they are impacted, that there are support services available, and two, to work on the primary prevention with some of these outreach activities so we can hopefully make an impact on this before it happens. Mm-hmm. So it's a really challenging event because it requires societal changes and that type of thing. But we just want here on campus to let our students know that there are support services and that there are people that care about this issue and that we are standing up and not accepting this type of behavior and that there are consequences to this type of action.
Okay, thank you. I want to ask Jessica a question before we move on to some of the other things about Denim Days. So Jessica, I know you're in the Cross-Cultural and Gender Center. It used to be at one point called the Women's Center just not too long ago, and we purposely changed that to the Gender Center. And some of the impetus of that, I believe, was that we're having men and women have issues or concerns that their needs may not be always met. And in relation to this issue itself, sexual assault, are there any specific things that the Cross-Cultural and Gender Center, with emphasis on the gender part of this, that you're doing with your colleagues and our students to try to bring awareness that sexual assault, sexual violence is not just a women's issue, but also both women and men?
Sure. I think that historically, the Women's Resource Center at Fresno State did programming around all genders. So they were very intentional about that. So with the name change, it has just made it a little bit more obvious. We definitely don't want to assume that they weren't taking part in that. But it definitely, we have been much more intentional about bringing in all perspectives and paying respect to all victims of all gender identities who are victims of sexual assault and sexual violence. We are putting on an event on April 19th. Dr. Jackson Katz is coming to campus to talk specifically about how men can be involved and make a difference surrounding gender-based violence, which sexual assault is a piece of that. So we're definitely doing outreach. We did a white ribbon campaign at this year's Take Back the Night, which focuses on men's participation in stopping sexual assault. So again, it all comes back to what Danica was talking about earlier, making sure that as a community, we are taking this issue seriously and not placing the onus on women as victims or as problem solvers in this situation. But as a community, we come together and put a stop to this.
Great. Thank you, Jessica. I appreciate the information. It's great that we've been doing programs in the Women's Center before for men and now in the Cross-Cultural and Gender Center that we've enhanced those programs. I think that's wonderful for our students, faculty, and staff, and really appreciate all your efforts in this area. So Danica, let's go back to you in Denim Days. We've talked about the promise. We've talked about some other issues, how this all got started. So how are you going to spread awareness to get people out to these different events that you have and come and sign the jeans and really get all this information out to the individuals here on campus? What kinds of things at this point are you doing to spread awareness of the day?
Right now, just to get the word out that we're having the event, we're starting with putting up a lot of flyers around campus and on social media. Luckily, the Denim Day campaign comes with its own extra set of campaign materials. So we have a whole set that's called There's No Excuse that we're going to start putting up. And each one shows different situations where people try to claim that there's a reason they raped someone. And we're arguing against this, saying there isn't an excuse and there's not an invitation to rape. From there, since our event will be in front of the bucket, we're going to get a lot of foot traffic and we're just going to start drawing in people that are walking into their classes or just taking their lunch since we'll be out there from 11 to 2. And we're just going to take that chance to have that face-to-face conversation with someone. So it's not just, oh, well, I saw it online. Yeah, like I get it. It's going to be, let's talk about this. Let's have a meaningful conversation so that we can all work together to make change.
Okay, great. Now, as I understand it, the day is Wednesday, April the 27th. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. We'll be having Denim Day on Wednesday, April 27th, in front of the bucket from 11 to 2 p.m.
Who are your partners? Do you have other partners on campus? Are there people from the Cross Cultural and Gender Center? Are there folks from any of our faculty or our staff and other departments? Do you have some campus partners in this endeavor?
Besides it being hosted by the Cross Cultural and Gender Center, we're partnering with our victim advocate, Lisa, and we have ROTC coming to help us as well.
Great. Are there any specific things that your partners will be doing during this day or just in general partaking in everything that's going on?
The Cross Cultural and Gender Center and our victim advocate will be giving support services and a lot of resources and handouts to our students. And ROTC is helping us get students to take our Denim Day pledge.
Excellent. So one of the things I've seen being on college campuses for many years, maybe either you or Lisa or Jessica could answer this, is sometimes when you see these programs and you see these things happening on campus and you've been a victim of these situations, what kinds of things will you do if this stirs up feelings in individuals when they're walking by and they see the Denim Days, they know about what they are, they know that's connected to sexual assault? Will there be counselors available on site anywhere? Will we be steering them to our counseling center? Are there other kinds of things if somebody just all of a sudden becomes stirred up and a trigger for them?
We'll be doing a number of those services. I, as the advocate and a confidential resource on campus, am available to assist with crisis intervention. I have also spoken with our counseling department as well as our medical providers in the Student Health and Counseling Center to let them know that April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And because of the number of events and activities that we are doing associated with this topic, to just kind of give them basically a heads up that talking about these issues and events may re-trigger a traumatic event. So we have made sure that there are staff available on these days, that they know what our resources on campus are, the information and resources that we'll be handing out on the table. We'll have my contact information as well as our community partner, RCS and Marjorie Mason Center, and our Student Health and Counseling Center phone numbers. So if they are re-triggered, triggered and if they need to speak with somebody and I'm not available at that time, they can reach out to myself or our other partners at a later time when they feel more comfortable. So I think we feel this is a topic which can re-trigger incidents of the past, and we're very mindful of that. And that's why we go kind of out of our way to talk to our other partners and to be as resourceful as possible and to give people a number of different mediums, whether that be online or via a hotline or in person, to speak with somebody should they feel the need to do so at that time.
Great. Danica, anything else you want to add, or Jessica, to Lisa's response?
In the Cross-Cultural and Gender Center, we do have peer supporting peers, so we will have a few of our peer supporting peers out there with us. They're not confidential, but they are private conversations. So from there, it'll be up to the student who they'd mm-hmm. like to speak with.
So those students will be there to support any of our students who this may have just triggered a bad feeling or something else.
Yes.
So Lisa, I had another question for you. I want to get back to the topic of sexual assault, and you're a sexual assault advocate and have a lot of experience in this area throughout your career. Higher education has received a lot of criticism, it seems. You know, I've been a higher ed administrator and a faculty member for over 3 decades. And lately, you see a lot of books written. You see the movie The Hunting Ground, where it portrays universities in a really negative manner in terms of handling this topic, both from awareness, information, reporting, in many ways moving forward. So can you talk to me a little bit about your feelings on how higher education is trying to work with some of this criticism that they've received and moving forward to a better place?
Sure. I think based on movies like The Hunting Ground and some other documentaries, that there has been some negative attention focused on how universities handle these types of incidences. And I think the state of California, and specifically within the CSU system, was really intentional when they created the advocate position. And they wrote in our executive orders, which is kind of our laws for the CSU systems, that the advocate was to be independent and confidential, which means that this position on campus represents the interest of the students apart from any needs or wants or wishes of the university. And I think they did so to hopefully let people know that we are serious about supporting our student, staff, or faculty with whatever things they think is going to be most helpful. So if that's a report, we'll support them to report to the university or to the police. And so I think the CSU system, as well as the UC system, California in general, was smart about that and took some of the criticism of how cases were being handled previously and put people like myself in the position so people know that we are responding and supporting the person alone, regardless of where we fall structurally on an org chart. So as an example, the advocate at the CSU systems cannot report to the police. The advocate can also not report to the Title IX coordinator, because they want to ensure that if somebody does come to speak to me, that I wouldn't feel any kind of pressure, like even if it's in the best interest, like we want to report this to make sure that it doesn't happen again. My job is to do whatever the wishes of that individual that was impacted by sexual violence were. So I know universities have received a lot of criticism. Thankfully, at the universities that I have served within this capacity, I have not felt that the university or the administration wants me to respond in a certain way, which is really nice, just to be able to support the student or staff or faculty with whatever they think is going to be most helpful. And sometimes it's to report and sometimes it's not. Even though I am one of the few confidential resources on campus, myself and the counselors and therapists in the Student Health and Counseling Center are the only confidential resources on campus. So if somebody discloses an incident of sexual violence, whether they were a student here at Fresno State, to a professor or to a coach or to a staff member, that person has to legally report that information to the Title IX coordinator. And that's really important information that we hope everybody knows. Most of these individuals do not want to report it, especially if they have a connection with a student and the student had no intention of disclosing this for purposes of reporting, but just to say that they're having a difficult time, or maybe they have a connection with their professor and they felt safe doing so. That professor, that staff member doesn't have a choice. The state of California and our CSU executive orders have indicated that all faculty and staff that are not myself, the advocate, or the counselors have a mandate to report all details of a disclosure of sexual violence to the Title IX coordinator. And the reasoning behind that was to kind of balance the protection of all the other students in the university. If they know of somebody that their name has come up a number of times, that this person has been reported to have perpetrated a sexual assault, then the university feels like it's important to balance the safety needs of the other students on campus. And so that's the role of the Title IX coordinator, whereas mine is to support the student regardless of what they want to do and just provide those helpful resources that they think is going to be most beneficial to them at that time.
So it seems that your role really is to help students to navigate through this horrendous situation and get them to the resources that they need in order to move forward and getting the help that they need. Is that fairly accurate?
Yeah, that's exactly what I do. Just provide confidential support services, let them know their options and resources. If they do want to report, I go over, you know, what that looks like and the types of questions that they're going to be asked and those types of things to give them back the power that was taken for them. Mm-hmm. And because everybody we believe, or I believe coming out of my office, that people are experts in their own life. So whereas something that I may think is important and would like for them to do, I recognize that they know themselves best. And so whatever they think is going to be most helpful at that time is the service that I'm going to provide and the resource that I'm going to connect them to.
Great. Let me ask you this last question, and that's, I hear a lot people refer to individuals as victims and survivors. Could you explain to our audience what is meant by that?
Sure. So this is a conversation that actually a number of people ask me about. What's the term that's the most appropriate given the situation? Mm-hmm. And for me, I think it's important to recognize that different agencies use different terminology. And so if I'm talking to the police, oftentimes the word used is victim. It's used in our penal codes. It's used in the legislation. It's a term in criminal justice and criminology textbooks. It's a term that they use. And so based on that, I may use the term victim because that's what they're using. If it's a community agency like RCS, you may find individuals using a term like survivor. And sometimes people will classify like originally they were a victim, but as they move through the process, they go from victim to survivor. I think it's always best just to use the individual's name. I think it's a safe word to use, so I'm not classifying or putting a label on their victimization. And so that would be my advice, is to use their name and be most respectful, because some people have strong reactions to either words. I've heard good and bad things about that. Or, you know, if I'm talking to somebody else, then I will use the term the student or the faculty member. Just safe terms to protect their identity, and because people have strong associations sometimes with the victim-survivor word. So that's kind of where that stems from, and best practice is to just use the student's name.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
So this is about a wrap on our program. I want to thank Danica, Jessica, and Lisa for being here with us today. It's been very informative and enlightening. I hope everybody get out to Denim Day and participate and show their support for our students and faculty and staff on this important topic. Thanks for joining us this morning, and please join us next Sunday morning at 10:30 for another Fresno State Student Spotlight on KFSR. We're on the air at 90.7 FM and streaming worldwide at www.kfsr.org.
KFSR presents the Fresno State Student Spotlight every Sunday morning at 10:30. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.